The racism is targeting them. There is a specific form of racism in this country linked with the colonial past because colonial mentality have not disappeared.
In February, the Parliament voted an amendment to oblige the Ministry of Education to teach through the school textbooks the history of colonization, but in order to insist on the positive aspects of it. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Khaled Sidmohand in Paris.
For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Monica Lopez.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB, Stony Brook, New York. Time for Off the Wall. Everybody, the program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you for the next, slightly under an hour, I suppose. And, there should be a theme to every week, and I guess the theme this week is going to be anger. Yeah, I'm angry. I'm angry, I'm fed up, I'm pissed off, whatever you want to call it. I've had enough. So I guess, you know, you're in for almost another hour of bitching about one thing or another. And we're still unable to hear your bitching because we can't take phone calls yet. But we're working on fixing that. I guess we should start off by explaining some of what happened here last week. Well, it's kind of simple, actually. I wasn't here, and of course this makes no sense to people who listen to the radio show over the internet or on the shortwave, but for those of you who listen here at the FM station in Stony Brook, New York on Tuesday evenings, you were treated to about 45 minutes of silence last week, and the reason for that is not because I was irresponsible and just didn't feel like doing the show. Oh no, I did the show. I went to a great deal of trouble to do the show, in fact. I risked life and limb. But the problem is nobody showed up here to play the CD that I brought in. It happens, you know. It happens. It just seems to happen too much, but it happens. But that was the culmination of a week where basically I was in the position of kind of shouting into the wind. You know, you ever have one of those days? I had one of those weeks where basically you're standing there, you exist, but other people don't believe you exist. And you're getting increasingly frustrated because you just want people to know that you're there. And they don't. It's like that dream, you know, where you're shouting and nothing comes out. And, you know, we all get this to a degree. We all get this this sense of non-existence, this sense of helplessness. In fact, I think we're trained to accept it. We're taught that you can't really do anything, so don't bother trying. But boy, did I ever get a bit of that in the last 10 days or so. But it started, I had this doctor's appointment in the city. I was there to see optician, ophthalmologist, whatever they call the people that look at your eyes. Because, you know, as you get older, your eyes start to do weird things, and, well, this is not going to turn into a program where I complain about, you know, getting older and how certain things don't work the way they're supposed to work anymore. But in any event, I went in there for this appointment, you know, to just have things checked out. And I'm fine, don't worry about that. But I had to wait, you know, and I understand waiting, especially when you're in a doctor's office or a dentist office, you know, you have to wait. Or a mechanic, you know, there's always waiting involved. It's part of the process to make you feel like you don't really matter all that much. You know, you matter a little bit, but you don't matter so much that people will run and help you like some kind of fast food joint. And even there, you have to wait. So I'm waiting. I'm waiting in this, I can only describe it as a nursery. Yes, the waiting room was a nursery. Now, this is something maybe as I get older, I just get more and more impatient with this. But I am so sick of people with their kids who believe their kids are the center of the world and everybody else can just take a flying leap someplace. I don't mind people having that attitude. I just mind people exhibiting it in every action that they perform throughout the course of a day. An example, a friend of mine recently was flying a cross-country flight on an airliner, which I won't name, to avoid embarrassment. And he had a baby sitting behind him, or a baby, you know, somebody under 5 years old. They're all babies, all right? The entire flight, this kid was kicking the back of his seat. I think we've all been there. We've all had that happen. Kids screaming, kids kicking, kids throwing things. And at the very end of the flight, he's getting off the plane, walking into JFK. And the kid's father says to him, "By the way, thanks for putting up with all the kicking." Why in God's name didn't the guy do something to stop all the kicking? Instead, he just sits back and watches little Junior. Oh, isn't that cute? He's kicking the person in front of him over and over and over again for 6 hours. Can't raise our voice. Can't bark out orders to the kid. The kid has to express himself. Isn't he cute? So yeah, you know, you're supposed to put up with the torture. And there in that waiting room, I had to put up with torture too. There were not only, not just one kid, there were two kids. There were siblings. Now everybody was there. I couldn't figure out why everybody was there. I didn't even know who was being checked out or what. But there were two parents, two kids, and a nanny. Yeah, they had a nanny. And here's something else. I guess I'd never really experienced this before either. But it was one of those French nannies. Apparently there's this whole big thing in New York where everybody has a French nanny. Now, the parents were 100% American. In fact, I think they were from the Midwest or something. And they're talking to their kids, you know, like any normal Midwestern parent would. But the nanny kept talking to everybody in French. It was really weird. And whenever the kid would say something, the nanny would say, "En français," and insist that he say it in French. And it was just such a bizarre thing. This kid's getting French lessons in the waiting room of the eye doctor, and I've got to sit there and put up with all these, you know, yelling back and forth. It didn't stop there, of course. The kids got into a fight. They started throwing things, screaming, running around, mayhem. I just sat there like I wasn't there at all, because I really was trying not to be. And some of the terms that parents use these days, it's really funny. I mean, the younger girl was beating on her mother, really hurting her. Mother was saying, "Please stop hitting me, that hurts a lot." "Please stop hitting me? Oh my God." And then, finally, discipline was shown at some point, where the mother issued an ultimatum. She said, if you say that hurtful word again, I don't know what the hurtful word was, but it was a hurtful word. That's a very hard phrase to say. Hurtful. I can't do it. Wow. Something else I can't do. Okay. That bad word. If you say that bad word again, you're going to get a 4-minute timeout. A 4-minute timeout. First of all, what in God's name are these timeouts everybody's getting? Because I saw it happen. I saw the kid actually get a timeout. And the only thing I can figure out is that when you're in a timeout, you're asking why you're in a timeout and how long the timeout lasts for and will there be another timeout. And it doesn't seem all that different from when it's not a timeout. I guess maybe they're not running around screaming quite as much because they're concerned about the timeout. And why a 4-minute timeout? Who came up with that number? 4 minutes? Is this a hockey game or something? I mean, you know, 5 minutes, okay, I could see because, you know, 5, 10, 15, those are the numbers that are kind of rounded. But 4 minutes, what, 4 minutes, 30 seconds, what? Is this some kind of book where people look it up and say, well, this kind of offense dictates a 4-minute timeout? Oh, boy. I mean, that was the funny part. The French-speaking nanny and the timeouts and the discussions with the kid about the timeouts and the hurtful expressions and things like that. But then the inevitable screaming, crying, throwing, running started. And of course, parents don't say anything about that. You must sit there, you must put up with my adorable brats. That's just the way it is. Okay, I put up with it. I did my time. I did my penance. And I was glad when they all went away. Don't know what happened to them. I don't care. They're all speaking French, giving timeouts, whatever it is they do to each other. More people came in, more brats came in, running around. I don't know, I wasn't seeing a children's doctor. I don't know why all these kids were there. But the waiting room by default is a nursery. That's what I don't understand. I guess it's like, you know, McDonald's syndrome, where there has to be a playpen no matter where you go. Can't get adult food anymore. All right, whatever. So more people came in, more people left, and it was after a while, after about 2 hours or so, I started to wonder, you know, I'm not one to make a fuss about things. I'm certainly not one to complain. I'm happy to just fade into the woodwork and not be seen. But why is it that everybody seems to be coming in here, waiting a little bit, and then being seen, and then rejoining the human race out there in the street? Why is that? And so, you know, I let another 20 minutes go by. I put my own little ultimatum into effect. I said, look, if this person that just came in 10 minutes ago gets seen by somebody, and I don't, I'm going to stand up. Yeah. And figure out what I'm going to do after that. Well, I did that. Because that's exactly what happened. The person did get seen. So I stood up. And I walked down the hall to the place where they initially told me to go down to the nursery and wait. And I said, you know, have you forgotten about me? You know, I've been here over 2 hours. What's going on? And I knew I was in trouble when they said, who are you again? Who are you? Oh, that's just great. That's rich. That's wonderful. Who am I? Well, I told them who I was, and it turns out they lost my chart. They had only just made my chart, but apparently within that period of time, they had managed to lose my chart. And so I didn't exist. I could have sat there until now, I guess, and nobody would have said anything to me. So they had to run all over the place to figure out who I was, to find my chart. At one point, they found my chart, but they said that I looked older than 36 months. Yeah, they thought I was 36 months old at one point. Eventually, I got to see the guy, and everybody was really, really apologetic. And, you know, I guess that's sort of, if you're patient, if you just kind of hold it all in, at some point someone's going to say, you know, I appreciate you being so patient. And does that make it all worthwhile? No, not at all. It's just I don't like to make, you know, huge scenes. You know, go all American on them where, do you know who I am? I will not tolerate this. I demand first class. Waiter, I want your attention, your full attention, your undivided attention. This pillow is not fluffy. You know, things like that. I just can't get into that mode. So I took it. Spent the whole day at the doctor's. It was, you know, an experience. Hey, it gave me 16 minutes of material to talk about on the radio. Everything has a silver lining. All right, you know, once I can take it. I can take it occasionally when this happens. What I can't take, though, is when it continues to happen. Now, the reason I couldn't be at the radio station last week was because I had to give a deposition against the city. The city of New York, which arrested me last year. Yet to them, I do exist. I existed because I was standing on the street watching people parade and was swooped up. And go listen to the first show of September 2004 if you want to hear firsthand what that was all about. Tons of fun. So, yeah, charges were dropped, but a lot of people are participating in lawsuits, and I'm certainly one of them. In order to do that, though, you have to give evidence. You have to answer questions from a hostile lawyer. Hostile meaning that they represent New York City, and they're going to try and get you to slip up somehow, prove that you're lying. I don't know how they're going to try to do that, but that's how they operate. All right, so that is where I had to be last Tuesday. And that's why I couldn't do the radio program. Now, I did the radio program. I put it onto compact disc. I'll get into that in a little bit. But this legal appointment was very important. It's something that I've been preparing for quite a while, actually. And the lawyers who represented me, they were preparing for it as well. And I was getting these phone calls about a week before the actual date was approaching. From one of the lawyers at the National Lawyers Guild. Great people. They do an amazing job, and they really looked after us throughout the whole process and are continuing to do so. And I got the message from the lawyer saying, you know, your date is next Tuesday. Just want to make sure that you're aware of it. You're going to be there. I called back and got an answering service, left the message, saying, yes, I'm aware of it, I'll be there. And next day I got a call back from a different lawyer saying, we got your message, we'll see you there. This happened again. This happened twice, actually. I got another call from the same lawyer, just making sure that I was going to be there. Did the same thing, called back. They weren't in, left a message, got a call back from a different lawyer the next day saying, everything's cool. Well, last Monday night, I was checking my voicemail because my phone is not always on. Lots of people enjoy being bothered at all hours of the day and night by telephones ringing. I have a very simple solution. I turn my phone off when I'm busy, when I'm sleeping, when I'm away. You know, I don't believe in always being reachable 100% of the time. I went to see a movie with some people the other day, and everybody turns on their phone immediately. Oh my God, is anybody trying to reach me? Good Lord, you were gone for 90 minutes. What could have happened? Obviously, the world is still here. Everyone's got to immediately know if they're trying. And this was on a weekend, you know? Try turning off your phone for an entire day. It's really nice. It's a great feeling. Unfortunately, though, sometimes the exact opposite can happen. And I guess I'm making the argument that you should keep your phone on at all times. Because when I listened to the messages on Monday evening, I heard a message from that first lawyer who had been calling me and who I had been returning their calls and getting a call back from a different lawyer. She left me a message saying, I haven't heard from you. Therefore, I have no choice but to cancel your appearance. I could not believe this. I could not believe it. I tracked down her cell phone number. I called her on the cell phone. I said, you've got to be kidding me. I've been calling you back. I've been leaving you messages. Do I not exist? Do you not hear me? What's going on here? And she was stunned. She was surprised. She was flabbergasted. She could not believe that I was leaving her messages because she never got any of them, even though another lawyer in the exact same office had been calling me back. Apparently, the two of them had not talked. And people ask me why I carry two cell phones. Well, this was one of the reasons. This is one of the times where it really came in handy. I called my voicemail with the other cell phone, found the message from the other lawyer, and held the phone up to the other cell phone, and was completely vindicated. That's not why I got two cell phones, but it's just one of the fringe benefits of having two cell phones. So, yeah, it wasn't my fault again. Again, I'm getting the apology. Oh, my God, we're so sorry. You've been completely wrong. You must feel awful. Thank you for being so patient. Yeah. You see where this is going. So technically, I could have even been here last Tuesday at this place. But by that point, I had gone to such trouble to make sure somebody would be here to press the damn play button on the CD that I had left for two different people. Two different people. Because I know from past experience that you got to make sure. You got to be 110% sure. So, I figured, you know, this will be kind of cool. I'll listen to myself at 6 o'clock and hear just what the show sounds like. Hear what I put everybody else through. And the news ended and there was silence. I figured, you know, probably the CD player didn't work quite right. It doesn't work quite right lots of times. But then more time went by. And it became apparent that nobody was here. Now, the reasons aren't really important. I know one person had a horrible car breakdown thing, and no phones in sight. These things happen. Someone else had to be someplace else, miscommunication. But if anything just reinforced the feeling of not existing. Hearing 45 minutes of dead air, where your voice should be, certainly was one of them. And it underlines a problem that we have here at this place that really, really needs to be addressed. We need people. We need people to keep this place going. Now, we're a college station, but we're also a community station. That means that people who are involved in the community work here as well as people who are involved in the college. Now, you know, I don't want to put down the university without a good reason. But students are just not as involved as they should be in things that are going on. And that includes this place. It includes all the things that are going on. It includes world events. It includes local events. People come in here, they just want to get their degree, they just want to start their career, and not be bothered with anything ideological along the way, or anything creative, God forbid. The result of that is that places like this suffer as a result. And that's something that we need to face, to focus upon. We need to do something about it. And the most important thing is to realize that this is a radio station here on Long Island, one of the last few creative radio stations that exist, that survives both on listener support, listener input, and the volunteers who come down here, some of them every day, some of them once a week, some of them once a month. This is how we survived since 1977. But if we lose that, if we lose people who take an interest, people who are genuinely concerned, for instance, people on this campus oftentimes don't even know we have a radio station. And students these days don't listen to radio. It's true. They don't listen to radio. They download music off the internet. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Radio should not be something that you can duplicate with an iPod or with a CD randomizer or just by tying into some kind of music stream on the net. Radio always has to be something different. At every radio station should be something different. Nothing upsets me more than hearing stations that simply rebroadcast other stations. So this is a place where you can come down and do something different. And it's a place where you can listen and hear different things. That's the magic of radio. That's what drew me in so long ago. Well, not that long ago, but long ago enough. And it would be really, really sad if that enthusiasm started to wane, if people started to think that radio was irrelevant. Well, you know, radio is irrelevant. Commercial radio certainly is. Why in God's name would you want to listen to that crap? But this place you can do anything you want. Well, except for all the crazy restrictions that we're being faced with. But you know what I mean. You can be creative. You can do a radio play. You can play local music. You can mix songs in ways that have never been mixed before. You can edit things. You can do talk shows. You can take phone calls as soon as we get a delay system. More importantly, though, you can just be a part of something. A part of something important. And I fear that's what we're facing. As I see in other places, other radio stations are facing the same kind of problem. It would have been unheard of years ago for this place to actually have nobody in the studio to press a button. There usually were three or four people around. We have to move back towards that. So, hopefully in the next few weeks, few months, in the time ahead of us, we'll be redoubling our efforts. Is that a word? Redoubling our efforts? Okay. To get new people here, more people here. I'll give you a phone number. If you call area code 631, actually I'm going to demonstrate it here. This is our hotline. I have to dial less digits because I'm here.
Hi, you've reached WUSB's listener feedback line at 516-632-6498.
You know, I think it's time we change that recording. The area code is wrong. Oh, my God. You see, that's an example right there. I had no idea. We need people to come in here and do things like that. Keep things updated, fixed. The area code changed. That was years ago. Oh, my goodness, that's embarrassing. I'd go in there right now, but I don't know the password. Anyway, the phone number is 631-632-6498. That's our listener feedback line. You can leave a message. You'll never get a human there because it goes to voicemail all the time, but that's where you leave a message. If you have something to say, or if you want to join the place and become part of it. And radio is really a magical thing to become a part of. If you're on campus, and you know, I would like to hear more people from on campus, because you guys are the future. You guys are supposedly embarked in an adventure of higher education, so we especially need people like that to be a part of this station, but we're not keeping anybody out. But if you're on campus, you only have to dial five digits. We make things so easy for you. Just the last five digits, 26498. But you probably already know that. So, yeah, it would be good to see this place become lively, where there's always a crowd of people around, people making tapes, making radio shows of various sorts, not just becoming a music box, not just becoming a place where we play what other stations play. It's always been different here. All right. And also, this programming note. One of our staffers, and this is proof of how this place does continue to exist, Jim Seitz is on Friday evenings, has very kindly offered to air the program that did not air over the radio station during his show this Friday night, and that will air from Friday from 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock p.m. right here on this radio station. And that's really cool, because it's very frustrating when you go to the trouble of making a show and it doesn't air. Yeah, it's on the internet, but it sounds different on the radio. It just sounds different. The internet is not yet at broadcast quality. for the kind of bandwidth that most of us have. So again, tune in this Friday night, 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock, as Jim offers that radio time to make up for the dead air that we had here last week. And that show was kind of interesting, too. It was a program where I was actually driving around in my car. I don't know if anybody's ever done that before on the radio, where they've done the radio show. I mean, people have called in while driving, but I was actually wired and, you know, doing the whole show. It was kind of cool. But it was a test, mostly. It was a test to see if this kind of apparatus would work for when I go away this summer to all kinds of bizarre and strange places, including the high seas of both the Atlantic and the Pacific, Mongolia, China, and a hacker camp in the Netherlands this July, which I suggest everybody check out. It's called What the Hack, www.whatthehack.org. So, yeah, okay, continuing, this feeling of helplessness, this feeling that you're shouting into the wind, the bitching, the anger that I've been feeling over the last week, has got nothing to do with any of this. This is simply the theme that has been laid out for me. This is the rice bed that I put my vindaloo on later. This is just simply the prelude. It got me in the state where I realized that, boy, life is absurd. What's going to happen next? Well, this is what really got me angry. Reading the news. Well, yeah, it always gets me angry. But reading the news a couple of days ago. And I don't know if you remember the story that we aired here on this radio program. I think it was on November 16th, 2004. So if you go to the archive, which is located, by the way, www.2600.com/off-the-wall, listen to the show on November 16th, and you'll hear that we played excerpts from a television. It's not a documentary. It's just basically a guy walking around with a camera, a news guy who happened to catch something really disturbing. He was filming U.S. Marines inside a mosque in Iraq. Yeah, that alone would have been unthinkable a few years ago, I know. But there were these people on the ground, supposedly people who had been killed one way or another, Iraqis. And this one Marine walked up to one of the Iraqis lying on the ground and said, "He's not really dead, he's pretending to be dead." And at point-blank range, he just fires a gun into the guy and kills him, and then says matter-of-factly, "Well, he's dead now." And at the time, this was so shocking, so outrageous, that words really were hard to come by. To see such barbarity displayed. And you realize that so much of what's going on over there is really going to come back to haunt us someday. Because what we're doing is unforgivable. And this is a perfect example of it. Abu Ghraib is one thing. All the misery that's that we've brought over there is another thing. But this was probably the most blatant example of the callousness, of the superiority that our guys over there exhibit. To shoot somebody, to kill somebody at point-blank range who obviously is not posing any kind of a threat, and to be all smug about it until you realize that you're being filmed. That's the kind of stuff that just makes you realize what a bad move this whole thing was. Well, got worse. Navy investigators have determined a U.S. Marine acted in self-defense when he shot an apparently wounded and unarmed Iraqi inside a Fallujah mosque in November. Keep in mind, there was video. There was video of this. You see the guy lying there on the ground, no weapons anywhere near him. And yet they say this. They say he fired in self-defense. How could they do that? The answer is in the sentence. The answer is the first two words of that sentence, Navy investigators. You get it? It's like asking a cop if another cop could possibly be guilty of something. The answer will always be no. The Marine who will not face charges, and apparently we're not even allowed to know this guy's name. Can you believe that? We don't get to know who he is. He's protected. He's anonymous. Oh, I would like to find out who he is. If anybody recognizes him from the video, please let us know. The Marine who will not face charges was under investigation in the shootings of four enemy combatants as part of an operation during the siege of Fallujah. On November 13, 2004, the mosque shooting was captured on videotape. An investigation by the Naval Criminal Investigative Service determined that the Marine acted in self-defense within military law and the law of armed conflict. Well, apart from the fact that there are rules to war, what we saw in that videotape could not possibly be sanctioned by any of those rules. How war can have acceptable behavior as to how and when you can kill somebody, that's beyond me. But regardless, there's just no way that that kind of a thing can be justified. Although that Marine has been cleared of wrongdoing, the investigation remains open because autopsies of some of the bodies found in the mosque turned up bullets that were not from his gun. Gee, you think more people might be involved? What a shock. Anyway, the incident was recorded by a television journalist embedded with the Marines. I believe that journalist wanted to erase his own tape at one point because he was so embedded. The Iraqi was among several wounded men found in a mosque that Marines said had been the source of small arms and rocket-propelled grenade from the previous day. Remember, these guys had been in there for 24 hours, the people lying on the ground. The Marine approached one of the men against a wall, saying he's expletive faking he's dead. He's faking he's expletive dead. Yeah, the ultimate crime, being alive. The Marine raised his rifle and fired at least one shot into the wounded man, at which point the companion said, well, he's dead now. The Marine seen on the videotape was part of a squad from the 3rd Battalion, 1st Marine Regiment, so there you go, listeners, you have something to go on. Find this guy. Find out who he is. Even if somebody is innocent, you still know who they are. I'm sick of this special treatment that people get. Especially in situations like this, where it's so obvious that there's more to the story than what you're being told. And apparently our government no longer cares how bad it looks. You know, they'll go out and torture people now. They'll go out and endorse people being found completely not guilty, even though the evidence is right there. Another case in point, the Italian hostage situation where security guy was killed trying to escort a former hostage killed by American troops. The Italian version of the report came out. The American version completely vindicated the troops, saying completely legitimate. They should have killed more people, in fact. The Italian report was a lot more logical. Did not accuse them, like some people are doing, of deliberately targeting the Italian journalist or her bodyguards. There are people saying that, and I think that's crazy, because it doesn't make any sense. Well, I guess if you subscribe to a huge paranoid conspiracy theory, it makes some sense, but you got to let it go at some point. What the Italians said was these guys were overstressed. They did not know what they were doing. It doesn't absolve them of responsibility, though. The Italian report said no clear warning signs were given to the vehicle. Flashing warning lights came at the same time troops began firing. The report also took issue with the American report about the speed the vehicle was traveling, saying it was 20 to 30 miles per hour, compared with the U.S. military's claim it was around 50 miles per hour. And get this, a classified version of the U.S. report appeared on the Internet due to a computer error shortly after its Saturday release. So, yeah, you know, the American military is proving its competence right there in so many different ways. But you have to have the guts to admit when you're wrong. There are so many times, so many instances where they have gotten away with things. Remember the ski lift incident, also in Italy, where all these innocent people were killed because some idiot was flying an Air Force jet and cut the cable and they fell to their deaths. It turns out the evidence was destroyed. And the Italians were outraged that this kind of thing could happen. As they are outraged at this, as the world is outraged by further examples of atrocities and people just getting away with all kinds of things they should not be getting away with. And this kind of thing just filters its way down into everyday society. Something happened in New York City, actually, a couple of days ago. Saw this story, I couldn't believe it. An off-duty police officer who owns an apartment building in Brooklyn got into a fight with one of his tenants about rent on Sunday, and a bullet from the lieutenant's gun killed the man. Gosh, how did the bullet manage to do that? The bullet just somehow jumped from the guy's gun into the person he was fighting with. What are the odds of that happening? It must be an intelligent bullet. It was protecting its master. How about reporting the story that this particular cop killed a guy because he got into an argument with him? You know? Already it's given in such a protective shield, you know? We don't know what happened. But somehow this guy, you know, got shot by the person's gun. Now, the cops wouldn't identify the guy, but his sister-in-law did, 41-year-old Shamik Walton, lieutenant with Internal Affairs, went to collect rent from a 28-year-old man at a building on Macon Street before 3 p.m. The two got into a fight. During a struggle, the officer's gun discharged. Now, here we go again with the gun issue. Guns are supposed to make us safer, right? Well, here's an instance, one of many, where it did not happen that way. Where somebody would be alive today if someone didn't walk into a situation armed. How many times do we hear about this? Happened right here in Setauket a number of years ago. Where a cop killed somebody outside a restaurant because he got into an argument with them, got away with it completely. Killed a kid, got away with it because he was a cop, off-duty cop, but still had his gun. And he can use them just like he can run through traffic lights without any reason whatsoever. And the thing that really gets me here, so many cases you don't find out who the guy is that did this, this time we did. They don't talk about filing charges, they just talk about the officer getting treatment for trauma. Now, if I get into a fight with somebody, I've got my gun with me. Oh, you don't know if I have one. Oh, well, you know, that's part of the intrigue, the mystery. Yeah, so I'm arguing with you. I'm fighting with you, in fact. And somehow my gun discharges and kills you. And the cops come. The first thing they're going to do is take me to be treated for trauma. Yeah, that's how it works here in the United States. You don't get charged with anything. You get treated for trauma because they care about you. Oh, please. You know, it's one thing to be a member of an armed gang, but to have no scruples whatsoever, to just blindly assume all the time that your guys can never do anything wrong, and to let other people suffer because of that, it's shameful. So you have to always question these things whenever you see them being reported. You have to just ask, is this really the way it should be reported? Are we not being treated as equals here? All right. Our email address, otw@2600.com. And we welcome your feedback in all sorts of different ways. Got this piece of... I'm continuing on the anger thing, because I'm still angry. And you can see what I'm really angry about. I'm just angry about people being mistreated. I'm angry about things being reported in the wrong way. But this really gets me angry, because this is something that will affect a lot of people listening to this station, a lot of people in the area. It's a letter being passed around. Not a chain letter, but just a letter being passed around on campus. Now, we get notices occasionally that certain things will be happening. Like they'll be turning off the lights, they'll be turning off the heat and hot water, they'll be turning on the heat and hot water, they'll be shining lights at you, they'll be closing roads, they'll be tearing things down, building things. This campus is a perpetual construction zone. But apparently, they're about to do something really major, and they've done this without really telling anybody about it. This is a letter that's being passed around by a distinguished professor. What a great term to have attached to your name. As an at-large senator of the University Senate, a member of the Campus Environment Committee, and as a fellow member of the campus community, I thought you should know the following. Most of you may or may not be aware, but on approximately May 23rd, a few days after graduation ceremonies, 2 weeks after the World Environmental Forum, and about 4 weeks after Earth Day, the university administration will begin a major modification of the main entrance to the West Campus. Now, of course, this means nothing to people who don't actually live on Long Island or have not seen this place, but just try and imagine it, because it speaks to a lot of things that apply to people whether they're here or not. The new design is a relatively straight roadway, roughly perpendicular to Nichols Road. That's the divided highway right outside campus, which will terminate in a standard T intersection traffic signal in front of the entrance to the administration parking garage. Yeah, we're going to have a traffic signal on campus. That's kind of interesting. Circle Drive will be reconfigured to align with the traffic signal so that when not stopped at the light, cross traffic can transit at higher speeds along the new thoroughfare. The modification will be expensive and will entail removal of large, naturally wooded areas. It will open a view from the Fine Arts Plaza onto a nice sequence of traffic signals terminating in the distance at Nichols Road. In my opinion, the design is retrograde urban in virtually every respect and a classic monument to unnecessary environmental destruction. Perhaps the most important issue to the university community, however, is that absolutely no input to design of the new main entranceway and adjoining Fine Arts Plaza was solicited from any representative members of the faculty, staff, students, alumni, or surrounding community. The planning was carried out largely in secrecy by the upper administration and hand-picked consulting firms and presented to the University Senate in March as fait accompli. Sorry for mangling that. Absolutely no consideration of the opinions of a broader spectrum of the campus community was deemed necessary by the administration in determining the design. Far less destructive alternatives exist that would accomplish the stated functional goals to improve traffic flow and clarity of destination. These options and the aesthetic character of the entrance should have been openly debated by the representatives of the entire campus community. So if you walk over to the Wang Center, yes, we have a Wang Center, get over it. First building you see, in fact, when you come onto campus. If you walk over to the Wang Center, take a look east at the naturally diverse wooded areas which frame our campus entrance for the last time. They will be reduced to lifeless piles of chips shortly, a fitting postmortem to Professor Richard Leakey's address on vital issues pertaining to the survival of the Earth as we know it. Signed, Bob Aller, Distinguished Professor. Well, pretty distinguished letter there. It's the first I've heard about this. And I intend to find out more, as I hope all of our listeners do, on and off campus. You know, there aren't very many trees left on Long Island. Every day something seems to be destroyed to make way for another townhouse or another strip mall. But you think people on this campus would at least try to preserve what's left here. And I know well that stretch of woods that this guy's talking about. It's something that gives a little bit of greenery to a whole lot of development. In fact, I think it's that section where once there was a sign. It was a nature preserve. I'm not sure if it still is considered a nature preserve. And I might be thinking of a different part of campus, but I just remember the sign that was posted in various places saying, take only pictures, leave only footprints. I just wonder how much of that we've forgotten. So if you're on campus, please take an interest. Contact the University Senate, contact administration, read newspapers, write letters, and keep an eye out. It would be nice to see a couple of thousand people show up and link arms and prevent that from being destroyed. But in this day and age, we're taught that we don't matter. Our voices are simply shouting into the wind. Well, maybe so. But you can make it damn uncomfortable for the people who push you in various directions you don't want to go. All right, let's take a look at some listener mail, and then we got to get out of here because, boy, a whole hour has gone by. Let's see. Yeah, we got some feedback from last week's show. Even though last week's show didn't air on this station, not yet anyway, I got some feedback for that. Some of it good. Some of it, I want to read the bad because I always like to read the bad. It's more fun. Hey, Emmanuel, I just listened to the May 3rd episode of Off the Wall. I must say that as much as you complain about other people's driving habits, your driving needs some improving. Remember, I was driving while I was doing the radio show. So I guess there's something to be said here. Did I hear you right? You ran a red light? No, I didn't run a red light. I don't know where you got that idea. I was at a red light. I said I missed a light, meaning it was the first light that I reached and it was red. That's what I said. I have run red lights. When I was involved in that chase across Manhattan a month or so ago, I ran red lights then. But I don't. I ran a red light the other day because it was broken. Everybody was sitting there, not doing anything. And after about 5 minutes go by and everybody's just nodding pleasantly at each other, you say, you know, enough of this. Somebody's got to make the first move, and that was me. So, yeah, guilty as charged if... any running of red lights is considered taboo. But I didn't run a red light on the air. No, I did not do that. Continuing here, do you really think someone could see you wave them on in all that rain? Are you referring to when I waved a car on and got impatient when they didn't go, when I waved them on? Well, first of all, they had right of way. I generally wave people on when they're being silly and not going when they're supposed to be going. And it was not such a torrential downpour at that point that you couldn't see in front of you. It was daytime. Yeah, the person could see me. We made eye contact, and I even flashed my lights. So, yeah, they could see me. They could see me. It was a standoff. And I won, because I gave them right away, and they took it. All right, continuing. Don't you think that if you have the right of way, you should take it? Okay, well, as I said, I didn't have right of way, so I didn't take it. But yes, I certainly agree, if I have right of way, I'm going to take it. You don't want to try and stop me. All right. I had all these people writing letters now saying, oh, my God, Emmanuel's threatening me on the road. Please, take everything I say literally. It makes life so much more fun. Don't you think... Okay, I read that part already. And to top it off, the last thing you do on the show is cut somebody off. Well, you know, I didn't really cut somebody off. I was, I said I cut somebody off, but they were actually way behind. It wasn't kind of a, you know, like a life-threatening situation there. I basically got onto a road faster than I wanted to get onto it, because if I didn't, I'd be sitting there for another 10 minutes. It was one of those roads that always has traffic. So, yeah, I did the best I could, given the situation. Okay, continuing here, nice work for an hour-long show when you were only driving for half of it. You know, some people just don't have any sense of fun. They really don't. Now, I like your show, so some advice from me to you is go buy yourself a bicycle and sell the car for scrap metal. Oh, that's going to be fun. Yeah, doing a show while riding a bicycle. How do you think that's going to sound? Yeah, you want to hear me get killed on the air. Of course, I don't know how I get the CD here, but... I have half a mind to do just that. Maybe I will do a show from a bicycle. when I'm overseas or something. I'm sure you'd have more critical things to say about people's driving habits when you yourself are not surrounded by a metal cage complete with crumple zones, signed Tad. Well, Tad, thanks for the letter, but we'll see. We'll see what I do. We're just about out of time, and I'm looking for my outro because I keep misplacing things. There it is. But again, our email address is otw@2600.com. And again, a reminder, if you listen to the radio station and you missed the last week's show because it didn't air, tune in to Jim Seitz this Friday night at 9 o'clock. He's kind enough to donate an hour of his show to the airing of that. And of course, you can always hear our programs on the internet, www.2600.com/off the wall. Get involved with the radio station, 631-632-6498. Tune in for the WBAI fundraiser tomorrow night on Off the Hook. It's our one and only chance this spring to raise funds there. This is Emmanuel. I'll see you again next week. Good night.